This morning's scripture comes from three different chapters in two different books of the Bible. First is Matthew chapter 5, verses 43 and 44. You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Excuse me. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Second reading comes from Matthew 22, verses 33 through 40. Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Next reading is from Romans chapter 12, verse 13. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality.
Let's talk about food for a minute. Is that all right? Seems to be kind of the theme for the day. That's what I'm here to do today, talk about food and provide food. There are times when we want, when it's time to eat, and we settle for things that are fast and cheap. And there are other times when we want something done well. So, Monday, I was out and around. It was lunchtime. It was already too hot to work in my wood shop anymore. And I didn't think, and we didn't have any leftovers in the refrigerator for lunch, and so I just stopped by McDonald's and got a quarter pounder with fries. And I brought it home, and I watched a couple of episodes of Star Trek, because that was about my energy level for the day. And I've kind of always liked McDonald's. I usually regret eating it after I do, but I've always enjoyed McDonald's, and so it was okay. But there are times when I want a really good burger. And when I do, one place to go get one is Beamer's 25 downtown. They have excellent burgers there. Or I just make my special burger that I ate at another restaurant and reproduce. Some of you have had it. It's a, you know, ground beef patty with goat cheese, hot pepper jelly, bacon, and barbecue sauce. There are a few of you who don't want to be invited over for that. Susan, we'll cook something else for you that night, you know. And that's okay. It's a really good burger. Everything has its own distinct flavor in that burger. I have, by the way, we really enjoyed the Lenten dinners earlier this year, and I want to do some more of those. And so who knows, maybe we'll do burgers one night. So, a really good burger. There are also other times when, again, you know, time's running short, and we're just trying to grab something quick to eat. And so Taco Bell is right there. We want some Mexican food, and we go to Taco Bell. But when we want really good Mexican food, we, Lynette and I, are particularly partial to Alejandro's, the downtown location. The others are just fine as well, but we really like downtown. It kind of reminds us of some places we ate in the Dominican Republic when we were there. And they have the salsa bar, and what's not to love about a salsa bar. And so it's just a good place to eat. The point being, sometimes we want things done quickly, and other times we want the real thing. We want more of a commitment in our meal. And we're willing to take the time and pay a little bit extra to do it right. And that really is what I want to talk about. Can we talk about our commitment to Christ in specific ways, and not just in general ways? What really does it mean to be committed to Christ? And that isn't quite looking the way it's supposed to. It's supposed to say love God, neighbor, stranger, or enemy. I ran out of time and didn't test it out here this week. It looks great on my laptop, by the way. It looks like a million. But the blank screen's looking a little better right now. So we'll just go with it. One of the traditions that we have in this congregation, and it is a fairly common tradition in lots of churches, is to take the month of October and talk about stewardship. We talk about money each October. And part of the reason we do that is because, at least in our case, October is typically when we have our fall council meeting. Now, we've rescheduled that. It's the first Sunday of November. Bill, is that what we decided on? So it's a little bit later this year. But in October, the board and the executive committee are finalizing the church budget for the next year. We're finalizing the ballot for the next year. And so it is a logical time to talk about the ways that we are committed to the church. We normally talk about stewardship in those times. Some of us are more comfortable with that than others, but it is a logical time for us to think about these things. But we're going to do things just a little bit differently with that this year. And in fact, I have been planning this series of sermons, which is going to start on September the 8th, to take September and October to talk about discipleship, of which stewardship is a part. So there will be two Sundays in October where we talk about stewardship, but we're actually going to start talking about discipleship, the variety of ways that we express our commitment to this congregation in some specific ways. And, spoiler, you might anticipate from today's emphasis that Sunday school is going to be one of those things we're going to cycle back to because it's an important part of our life together. There is also a study guide in a basket in the vestibule. It will be coincidentally positioned next to me after church on the way out. This is the study guide. And each week there are some reflection questions that will anticipate our redesigned commitment card, our pledge card that we will do this fall. I've actually been thinking about these sermons since the end of last year. And what's got me thinking about it was last year when we turned in our pledge cards, no one younger than me turned one in. Now, there is no shame or guilt intended in that comment. It is simply a statement of the facts. No one younger than me turned one in. And so I thought, this is interesting. I wonder why not. Was it that we were just too busy and we forgot? Did I and some others not do a good job of advertising and talking about it and reminding you and encouraging you to do it? Do you just prefer not to share that information with the church? I don't know. It could be any of those reasons or more, but it did occur to me that if no one younger than me is turning one in, then maybe we ought to think about what we're doing there. Maybe there's just another way that we can work at this that will be helpful for us all. And so I began to think about it. We talked about it in board meeting. And Gloria Harmon really said the thing that provoked, in a good way, my thinking. You know, we were talking, maybe we just don't do pledge cards at all. And Gloria said something to the effect of, there is value in having people sign their name to a commitment to the church. And I thought, absolutely. That's a great reminder that there is value in our putting our promises on paper and signing our name to them as a reminder, as an indicator of how we want to live our lives together. So again, we will do a pledge card. It's just going to have some more categories on it this year. And so we've been talking about these things. And it does occur to me that we do talk about commitment to the church. When we have people join the church, of which we anticipate a number of folks doing that later this year, we ask them a question. Will you be loyal to the church, upholding it by your prayers and your presence, your substance, and your service? I don't anticipate changing that commitment at any point, anytime. But I did wonder, just as a thought exercise, if we were going to be really specific about that and ask people, here's how we have learned to follow Jesus together. How would we make that particular commitment even more specific? What specifically would we ask you to be doing when we ask you to support the congregation by your prayers and your presence? Your presence, when kind of do we expect people to show up? And in what ways do we expect and hope people will be involved? And could it be that we've been guilty of allowing this particular promise to just be a tad too general? that maybe, you know, it's time, rather than going through the fast food drive-through, to have the serve up the gourmet meal as we talk about our commitment together. So we're going to work on that with that. It's important because, and I am only intending to talk about our congregation now, and other congregations would do this too, but you're not members of those churches, and I'm not pastor of those churches. Let's just talk about us. We are a convictional community. A convictional community. What does that mean? I first came into that phrase in seminary, which I, when I was reading some theology written by James McClendon, who's no longer living, but he has some connections to the Church of the Brethren. And he introduces the phrase convictional community. I'm trying to remember. Oh, I didn't make a slide for that one. He describes convictional communities as communities that have certain beliefs and practices that if they were to change, we would be a significantly different community than we were before. They're the kinds of things that if we as a congregation said, we're not doing that anymore, we might have good cause to go cut off part of our church sign. Because the words that we use to describe ourselves on the sign out front wouldn't apply anymore. If we said, for instance, and this, don't go down this road, but if we were to say for some reason, ridiculous reason, we don't believe in Jesus anymore, we could still get together, but there would be no reason whatsoever to have the word church on our sign anymore, because we would no longer be a church. We would be something else. It's our belief in Jesus that makes us a church. There are some particular things, and we'll look at these this fall, that make us a Church of the Brethren, that if we stopped believing or practicing those things, we could be Oak Grove Community Church, but the of the Brethren wouldn't make sense anymore because we would have changed those convictions. We're not talking about changing. This is just an illustration. You understand. What it means to be a convictional community, and there are times when people will not want to join us because of the convictions that we hold. It doesn't happen often, but occasionally I've had people, you know, come and find out a little bit about us or even join the new members class, and they come up to that point. It is often our conviction that war is sin that has in my ministry about two or three times been the point where we say we love everything about you, but we're not ready to join you because of that. Those have always been fair, honest, meaningful, friendly conversations. But the convictions could not be merged. And so there was an integrity to the choice in that, those cases, not to become a member of the congregation for those few individuals. But you see how convictions work. They occasionally cost us something because they define who we are. So what are some of those convictions that we're going to look at this fall? Well, Margie read them this morning. And they're represented in that graphic that didn't do so, look so good on the screen. But I promise it will next Sunday. Just briefly, one of the convictions, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. You know, loving the way that Jesus invites us to love is not just an emotional response that only impacts one part of our lives. It touches us at every level. It is a commitment that pushes us to certain choices and behaviors. Because we have said we love the Lord our God with our heart, soul, mind, and strength, there are things that we do and there are things that we don't do because of those convictions. And these are measured in the quality and the type of relationships that we have with those who are closest to us physically in proximity, our neighbors. If we are loving God, then there are things that rule out choices about how we respond to our neighbor. They are choices that other people might find perfectly acceptable. We simply don't do those things because we've made a prior choice. Martha, my schedule got a little bit full this week. I was on the schedule to do the children's story this morning, and I asked Martha if she would step in and do it for me. I appreciate that very much because I just had a few too many things to do a quality job on that this morning. But the children's story that I was going to tell, I was going to give all the kids a sticker. And I was going to hand it to them. It's your sticker. But I said, don't do anything with it yet. because I was going to have a box with something in it. You can keep the sticker. It's yours. Or you can give me the sticker back and I'll give you what's in the box. And hopefully one of the kids was going to ask, what's in the box? And my response was going to be, I'm not telling. You have to make the choice, sight unseen. I had never had worked out what was going to be in the box. Because sometimes we make choices that rule out the other options. I was going to make them give me the sticker back. I didn't mention that. They had to give the sticker back to get the box. You couldn't have both. Sometimes once we make a choice, it rules out other choices. Loving the Lord our God, loving our neighbor as ourselves, there are things we just can't do because we've chosen to love in this way. We're also then told to love our enemies. Love your enemies. It is the significant influence behind our belief that war is sin. It's not that other people don't come to different conclusions on how to handle war. It's just that as brethren, we've made this choice over here that we've come to the conclusion that loving our enemies means don't kill them. And you know, that looks great on a bumper sticker, but it's serious that there are other options available. We recognize that we do have choices, but by having made this choice, we've ruled out all of those. And so if Jesus said to love our enemies, he probably meant that we would actually have some. I actually think that's an important part of that statement that we don't give serious enough credit for, you know, study and thought to. So who are our enemies? Not just the people that irritate us. I don't think that qualifies. But who actually are our enemies out there? And how then do we respond to them if killing them has been removed from our choices and how to respond to them? People often object. And they want to ask, you know, and if I've heard this, if I had a nickel for every time I'd heard this, I'd drive a nicer car. What would you do if somebody were breaking into your house in the middle of the night? Frankly, I have no idea what I would do if somebody was breaking into the house in the middle of the night. I do own a gun. It's a shotgun that my grandfather gave me. It's in the closet. I think there might be some bullets in the house. I'm just not sure anymore. It's been that long since I've even had it out of the bag. But maybe I could swing it like a baseball bat. But again, it's in the closet in a bag. We don't know what we would do in that circumstance. It's a silly example because we just don't know. I've read statistics of persons who have handguns in their house for personal protection. The overwhelming majority of times when someone breaks into someone's house like that, the gun is not a factor at all because the bad guy is in one room and the gun's in the other, so you can't get to it. And after that, it's equal money, equal odds on whether you use the gun or whether the gun is taken away from the person and used against the one who had it. So, you know, we have these questions, but perhaps we ought to start with a simpler example. You know, maybe loving that hypothetical person or responding to that person who broke into our house is not the way to start answering that question. Maybe we ought to really think about who our enemies are and how we are currently loving them rather than making up some situation that probably is never going to happen to 98% or more of us. Finally, we're called to love the stranger, that person who is most different from us, that lives in a part of town we don't often travel to or find our restaurants in. During the community work that I've had opportunity to do in Roanoke these last 15 years, I've met a lot of strangers, and a lot of them have surely become good friends, and I've learned so much from them. But if we'd bumped into each other in the mall parking lot after dark, we might have looked at one another a little bit differently. But we've had opportunity to get to know one another. You never know what a friend's going to look like at first glance. So we're considering these things. That's the very basic outline of how we'll be working at some things this fall, September and October. But what we want to do, what I want to ask you to do beginning today is consider carefully how the commitments to love the way that God calls us to love impacts our choices in life. How can our commitment to Christ and to this congregation help us love God, love our neighbors, love the enemies, and love the strangers better? That's how we want to measure our discipleship this fall. How are the things that we do, like sitting around at tables in the backyard and eating pancakes and listening to good music, how does that help us love God, neighbor, stranger, and enemy better? How does participation in Sunday school, how does serving and planning a children's disaster service child care training session help us do that? How does helping, you know, give food to Oak Grove Elementary and Patrick Henry High School, all of the things that we do and so much more, how do those specific things help us love the way we're supposed to love more effectively? And how can we pledge ourselves to this congregation in the coming year to do those things? I do hope you'll pick up a study guide and consider the nature of our commitment this year. And I want you to note two things. And so if you want to take out a pencil and paper and write these down, we will be talking about these a lot over the next coming weeks. Pledge cards will be due October 20. Today is September, August 25th. Randall's, by the way, we're wondering where Randall Aiken is this morning. I don't want to embarrass him, but today's his birthday. He's spending it with his kids. So, good for him. October 20, pledge cards will be due. October 27 at 5 p.m., Love Feast. The deacons have agreed to move Love Feast from the first Sunday of October to the last, so that in our conversations about discipleship, Love Feast will be the last thing that we do together. We will share Love Feast. If you go back in Brethren history far enough, Love Feast was the big weekend. And different congregations would schedule their Love Feast on different weekends so that everybody could kind of go around to everybody's. And lots of things happened at Love Feast in the old days, not the least of which was the young boys from one congregation would get to meet the young women from another congregation. And, you know, different kind of love going on there. But there were all these sorts of things going on, and it was fellowship and it was relationship. But it was the big weekend to measure and express our commitment to the church and to one another. What better way as brethren to express our commitment? I like the pledge cards, but I like Love Feast a whole lot better. We had to order some more communion glasses for Love Feast this year. So we have what we have, plus 144 more. So there's plenty. There's room for us all. So I want you to put that on your calendars now and plan to be here October 27 at 5. Start in here, we'll end up in the fellowship hall as a way to express our commitment to Christ, and to the church, and to each other. Amen.